Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking, what's the point of literary prizes? This comes off the back of last week's Man Booker longlist announcement, which includes plenty of titans of the literary world. Paul Auster, Arundhati Roy and Zadie Smith, among many others. This list comes as less of a surprise than last year's, which sparked lots of ranting and raving about who or who wasn't deserving of the coveted prize, and even to be on the list itself. People love to have their say on longlists and shortlists and winners, of course, whether it's the Man Booker, the Mercury or the Oscars, but why do we get so up in arms about them? Joining me on the programme today are Charmaine Lovegrove, publisher at Dialogue Books, Anne Meadows, commissioning editor at Granta and Portobello, and Ted Hodgkinson, senior programmer of literature and spoken word at London South Bank Centre. They're here to give us the literary world's take on why these prizes mean so much, or maybe they don't. Stay tuned and find out on Culture with me, Robert Bound. Ted, Charmaine, and welcome to the programme. Thank you for coming in today, and I'm glad you all know each other. And this possibly is a conversation you might have had over email, social media, or in, you know, over a pint at some point. So thanks for bringing it out into the open for our listeners. We won't tackle that "what's the point of literary prizes" thing head on. We shall maybe work to a conclusion by the end of our 29 allotted minutes here. But first of all, Charmaine, what do you think of this year's Booker list?
You know, I felt it was really predictable. And
because of some of the big names on there?
Because of some of the big names. And I just felt like we've come so far in publishing in terms of different types of storytelling that in some ways it seemed a shame to kind of go back to like the big blockbuster books, that some of them are great and some of them, you know, I'm happy that I read them, but I'm generally happy with most things that I read in my five books a week. You know, I just think I'm very lucky to have a job where I'm reading, but that doesn't necessarily mean that those books should be on prize lists. And, you know, I think ultimately prize lists allow readers and bookshops to have confidence in books that they wouldn't otherwise have.
This is the PR, the kind of PR value of being on a list.
Yeah, exactly. And so then to have books which are fine. You know, Zadie Smith, Swing Time, it was fine. Mm. But there was another story that she wanted to tell. So I'm not really sure why we're indulging that need when actually we should say, come on, tell that. Come on, Zadie, tell that story.
Yeah.
But by putting her back on the Booker Prize, it's kind of, you know, it. I don't think it doesn't give the public confidence outside of the literary world. And I think that we should be looking at what readers want and less of what the literary scene would like.
Well, that's an interesting thing, right? That, because there were some nods around the table, as you said that, Charmaine. There is something about the quality of the list, right? There is the thing that you need maybe you don't necessarily need a big name on it. It helps if a big name's written a really good book. That should be the way it is. And so, you know, that carries a bit of weight with it. Anne, you were nodding along there. What do you think of this year's list?
I think it's a list of titans and a list of writers.
I'm glad we had titans in the intro there. We got it right.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of a list you could have pulled up without reading any of the books, which I think is what Charmaine means. It does feel very predictable. And a number of the writers have been shortlisted for the Booker before and, you know, probably should have won for that book. Like Ali Smith was shortlisted for How to Be Both a few years ago, which is, you know, I think was far and away the best book on that Booker shortlist, and she lost out. So you do wonder as well.
A bit of Oscar syndrome kicking in here.
Yeah, if some of the writers, maybe this is a recognition of how important they are rather than necessarily, you know, it being this book being the best book that they've written and the best book to get shortlisted. But I would say, I mean, I think that...
Although I loved Autumn, Ali Smith's book on this list. I loved that book. I thought it was deeply... I thought it was so relevant and so fresh, and I kind of wish Winter had already come out. I don't know when she wrote it, and actually when it came out, it came out at the end of last autumn, didn't it?
It did. It came out, I think it came out in November last year.
Yeah.
And she wrote it. I mean, it came out, what, 4 months after Brexit, and it was the first Brexit novel, which is an incredible feat. And yeah, I mean, I think Ali Smith's an extraordinary novelist. I think most of these writers are extraordinary, but I do agree with Charmaine. It would have been nice to see maybe a few more surprises on the list, certainly.
Ted, let's turn to you and let's get some positive vibes from the man in the green jumper. What a beautiful colour.
Thank you so much.
You're wasted on the radio. Come on.
It's my summery green jumper. well, I mean, I just to chime in with you about Ali Smith firstly, because I think she describes at one point in the novel the news cycle post-Brexit as being like Thomas Hardy on speed, which I really am so grateful for that description, because it's such a great encapsulation of the kind of frenetic, crazy melodrama of the last few months. And I think I take Anne's point, Anne Charmaine's point, that in some ways it does feel like a kind of conglomeration of previous people who have been on the list, and in some ways it is it's the biggest hitters you could possibly imagine. I think we should draw a distinction there between a long list and a short list, and I think there are books which I think maybe aren't perfect, but they're by writers who have these extraordinary sensibilities who, even when they're not perfect, you want to hear from. And I do agree that there are books that could have been on here that probably would have been, it would have been more transformative for the writers had they been. But I also think there's something exciting about recognizing sensibilities that have really redefine some of them, what the novel is doing. And I think it is actually a really exciting list. A lot of them are formally quite daring. The Saunders, which I love, is challenging what a novel is. It's having fun with the idea of what a historical novel could be.
And this is what novels should be doing. We're in the 21st century now. I mean, it's fine just to write a story, but this kind of stuff, upsetting the apple cart in such a stylish way and such a clever way, that we need a bit more of this stuff, right?
Yeah, and I think...
Or maybe I'm wrong.
No, but I think, you know, I can see, you know, Lincoln and the Bardo, Underground Railroad, Reservoir 13, that I absolutely loved. Mm. You know, like, I loved those books. And they will be on my forever shelves, you know. But I think that one of the things that happens with these prizes is just the inspiration. Like, you need a spark of inspiration. You need to be doing something different. And then this is what's happening with, like, the Man Booker, is that suddenly there's just this tick box exercise. So then every article that I read was like, how many women, how many people of colour? And I think that then becomes really complicated. And I think that's where prizes are going to struggle, because ultimately this should have just been a norm. You know, it should have just been a norm that women and people of colour and from diverse backgrounds were included in the list. And instead, now we're looking at these lists and it's like, well, there were only three people of colour last year, but now there's five people of colour, so that makes this list better. And so then you suddenly are like, you know, and then you're just like, well, so what are we doing with these lists when we're just having to go through these tick box exercises? And some, you know, as someone that's running an imprint,
can you see that in this list, do you think? A bit.
Yes. I'm going to say
yes.
No,
you don't have, because
no,
we don't
want to, you know, actually,
we don't want to give you a piece of rope to hang yourself with here.
No, but
at all, but
it's fine. It's my own rope. It's fine. You know, as a publisher of an inclusive list, you know, then I spend, and as one of the very few black people of colour in the publishing industry, and as a woman, you know, I spent my whole life thinking about this, and I've spent my entire 20 years of my publishing career thinking about this. And so then when you see it on these really big lists, it's like, thank you, but I don't know, there's just a but of, like, now, you know, if, which I hope that Colson Whitehead would win, because I think that the Underground Railroad is, you know, was my favourite on the list.
And you've all read, I mean, that was one of the things I've got. I mean, we've all read most of these books. But
and also,
read
it's also
one.
Done really well elsewhere. Yeah. You know, I hope that, as you know, John McGuire, I just think he's like, McGregor, I just think he's incredible. He's absolutely remarkable writer. You know, I also, but you know, I think what the thing that I sort of struggle with is that then if another black man wins, then that's like three American black men in a row. And then suddenly it becomes a debate about like race and ancestry and, you know, and the books are missing. Yeah. And I just have, like, I feel really pained by that there's a debate that's going on outside that's actually, which is about race and is about culture and is about diversity, that's very negative.
Is it possible to just judge the best book? I mean, that's the thing with this, isn't it? Because we all kind of are reading, we all would like to read colourblindly, we'd all like to read completely internationally, devoid of anything. But then, of course, a novel has to sit in its context, etc. One of the points of a prize, presumably, is to sort of allow the cream to rise to the top, but also it's a promotional thing. Also, it has to set out its stall. It is always kind of accidentally or otherwise a political thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Charmaine to an extent, but I do think as well that it's kind of the outside narrative that politicises this list as well, and it's the media and it's the way we talk about it. I mean, I think this is a very, very strong long list. And, you know, I had sort of a mixed experience with the Zadie Smith. It sort of grew on me afterwards, and I find myself thinking about it a lot. I loved the ambition of Exit West. And again, like, the ending didn't quite satisfy me, but I think it's, you know, it's a refugee crisis sci-fi novel. That's amazing.
Yes,
and
okay.
And the Colson Whitehead and the Saunders, I thought they were both incredible. I mean, in a way, I think that for me, the worry with what's happening with the Booker has less to do with tick boxes and more to do with the fact that, you know, a few years ago, the prize did become open to Americans. And while that means that readers are being presented with all of this new exciting work, it does mean that as a publisher, there are just, you know, this year, I think four fewer slots that could have gone to a British or Irish or Commonwealth writer. And that's very difficult for the sort of literary scene of this country.
So as publishers, so you and Charmaine as publishers, that's something you're kind of grappling with. You're kind of like, hang on, there's plenty of cash in the US for the Austers of this world and all the rest of it to get their winnings. There's a nodding around the table.
We are
table
nodding a lot.
You two girls are nodding at that for sure, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that is really tough. And especially then, you know, all respect to Simon Prosser and to Hamish Hamilton for having such an incredible presence on this list. But then it also does make, so then if it's American and then, you know, published, then there just isn't enough space for other people. And because we need prizes in this country, we need prizes to celebrate writing, and we need prizes to be able to, for, like, you know, for TED at the South Bank gives a platform to a lot of different prizes. Grantor Portobello have a prize coming shortly. You know, we need prizes to encourage writing and saying that it's still important. And I think what's really great about the list is that, as you've just said, Anne, like, a lot of the books, there is a narrative that is telling us about the world we live in now. And if I've ever known a time where we've needed a narrative to explain what the hell is happening, then it's right now.
Yeah.
And so it's great that these books encapsulate that. And so I can see that it's, you know, looking at it from this perspective, suddenly I'm like, it does make sense, but there's always a but.
Well, there should always be a but, right? Size of this studio. Ted.
I mean, one of the things that's interesting about a list and a prize, I think, as well, is it shows you the way that authors are clustering around certain ideas or moments in history. And there are three novels that deal with the American Civil War, which feels as though that's something that's rising to
the
surface now.
Why is that happening, I wonder?
I mean, they're not deliberately written. Most of them weren't written in response to the current administration.
And you don't know when your book's going to come out. I mean, these are all kind of, well, other than the Saunders, I mean, these are people that know their books are going to be published. And
I mean, the Saunders, the germ for that was 20 years ago. So, you know, and he's been trying to work out how to write that particular moment of Lincoln with his son for that whole period of time, and has to reinvent the novel in the process. The Colson Whitehead, I think, is more recent, but as you say, there's always a but. I think that he's far too subtle a writer to draw sort of obvious links with what's going on in the current situation in America, and yet there are these really powerful resonances of that particular history of slavery and civil war that are coming out again and again. I think that's interesting, and it creates a conversation around that, you know, that part of history. And I also think I want to draw a link between the Kamala Shamsi and the Ali Smith, because, you know, we often talk about how difficult it is for novelists to grapple with the complexities of the present, and actually those are two novels which are really lucid and insightful about this, as I say, the Thomas Hardy on speed sort of times we've been living in. And that...
Trollop on acid?
Trollop on acid.
Sorry, anyway, I'm interrupting your flow.
But no, the exactly, you know, Dickens on, you know, amphetamines, but it's the... there is that...
I want to go to this party.
There is, I mean, actually, funny enough, I do think that one of the things, again, that the Zadie Smith and the Arundhati Roy both share is that they're both writers who write beautifully and luminously about the personal, about the individual self, and they've tried to extrapolate that over these vast Dickensian canvases, and it has led to a kind of Dickensian on speed sort of feeling about it as well. But I just want to single out Kamala Shamsi's novel, because I think that is, you know, this is a retelling of Antigone in the sort of ISIS and Islamic State sort of moment, and it really is a brilliant book, which, from a writer who has, I think this is her sixth novel, who has won increasing amounts of acclaim, and deservedly so. And I think as a Pakistani-British writer, someone who, you know, I like to think through things like the South Bank Centre and the prizes she's won, is a writer who is absolutely on the same level as the Americans on this list and the other writers who, you know, so I think it's exciting to see someone like Kamala going up against Paul Auster and potentially winning.
I totally agree with you with Camilla Shamsi, and I think Home Fires really was magnificent and is magnificent. And I think it's something that a book that everyone should be, if there was a book on the prize list that you might not see elsewhere, then that is one. You know, and then I think about when Julian Barnes wrote in The Guardian last year at the, you know, the prize, and just, you know, how angry he was at Americans, and then that turned into a sort of a race debate, and it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. And I think the main thing is that, yeah, we always have to go back to the detail of brilliant storytelling. And so, you know, then we have one book on the prize who no one's really read because it hasn't come out yet, and is a debut bookseller, novelist, published by John Murray. And so then, you know, then I'm really excited. I'm really excited to get hold of that and to read it and to really think about it. It's funny that it's like the shadow of the contenders, that of the other contenders, that I worry about those kinds of books getting lost.
They cast their shadows long upon the competition, many of them. So looking down the list here, there are two books that all of us have read, and that is Lincoln in the Bardo and the Zadie Smith. The Lincoln in the Bardo thing, you kind of have to, it was so well received and exciting, and it was all your jobs to have read it anyway as well, kind of. But with the Zadie Smith, what draws you to that? Is that something that we just go, as we might have done with Martin Amis in the 80s and 90s, I just need to read this person's writing. This is a big book. It's a literary book, but it's a big book. Is this what draws you to it, or is it also your job to have read something, one of the big hitters like that? Just out of interest, actually.
Well, I reviewed it for you guys, so I was reading it for that. But I was drawn to it because...
Touché!
I think that Zadie Smith's writing kind of as a body and as a work, and her nonfiction and her reviewing, and the way that she writes about writing itself, and the kind of contemplation that she brings to her life, and that kind of quiet exactitude, I find oddly thrilling. Although I've made it sound like it's minutiae, I think she's very, very good at honing in and following a sort of psychology over time. She is very, very precise about modern life and about ambition and about the sort of wasting of it, which I also loved in the John McGregor. I think you could talk about, you can arrange these books in so many ways, but one of them is speed. And George Saunders is like just like a cantering pace, you know, it's incredibly fast and sort of delicious and delightful and makes all of your atoms light up. Whereas the McGregor and the Zadie Smith, I would say, were... they're quiet books. They're books that get under your skin and that you sort of flow along with for a great deal of time. And they're both playing with temporality. So that's why I picked her originally.
How beautifully put, because that's the thing. I mean, there is an idea that, well, here's someone I need to read. They're part of the national and international conversation about writing. Rightly so, but I'm interested from your point of view. That's why I asked the question. It's not a loaded one. It's amazing. I like that. Wouldn't you love to write even a sentence that made someone's atoms dance?
Absolutely.
Right.
And it did. And that's a beautiful description of the Saunders. Yeah. It's exactly what it feels like. It does make you dance. And actually, to come back to the Zadie Smith, one of the reasons I come back to her often is I think that she's a really brilliant psychologist of fraudulence and failure and the sort of shadow self, you know, and she writes about that brilliantly in NW as well.
Yeah.
And also about friendship and the sort of tribal loyalties of friendship tested by a world in which you're forced to perform a version of yourself that is only part of yourself. And I think that she is someone who I think is an amazing moral intelligence. I should say, full disclosure, I read it partly because I was interviewing her, but I did so because I read everything that she writes, because I do think that she's someone who has a lot to say about the times we live in. I think that the book has, as I said, really, it starts out in the personal, it starts out in friendship, it starts out in childhood. And I was quite excited to see her write in the first person as well for the first time, because that's something that she obviously has done a lot in her nonfiction, but not in her novels. So, and that was a departure, and was as well to embrace dance and to write about new art forms in a way that she hadn't done before, and sort of broadened the kind of palette that she's writing with.
Yeah.
So I agree that some of the elements of it, particularly the kind of Africa sections of it, don't quite land in the way that some of her really brilliantly locally observed work does. And it's a different experience. It's not an atoms lighting up. I think it's much more of a kind of interior, kind of long night of the soul book, in which you're really kind of, you sit with it and it changes you over time. I think the Colson Whitehead did a certain amount of atom lighting, but it's a different kind. I think it takes you into this really excruciating history and does so in this sort of phantasmagorical physical way. But that was a book that I read being completely held by it and gripped by it in the same way that the Saunders did. It was something that absolutely pulled me through into a kind of into this subterranean cavern and got me thinking about history and that part of history in a way that was physical and tangible.
It's an amazing thing with the Colson Whitehead people. Everyone that I've heard speaking on this radio station, other radio stations, everything I've said, I've read in print about it too. Everyone said I had to sort of put it down at one point, such as the viscerality of it and kind of and the subject matter and the way that it's dealt with, which is a good thing. For a book to actually feel like it's red hot in your hands is a rare and pretty wonderful thing. Might make your atoms dance, but not in the way you intended or wanted, but in a kind of necessary way.
I just wanted to say about the Whitehead that it's really painful, actually, as my ancestors and being a product of the transatlantic slave trade. It's really painful to read, and, you know, I can't really watch Roots and Homegoing. I'm so, so happy that these books are in the world, because we're not taught about these subjects at school, and there isn't an understanding how we as black people are in these countries and why us Jamaicans are here and behaving the way that as angry as we are and taking to the streets right now. And so when you look at what's happening, when you have suddenly this chance of especially a white middle class audience for the first time to really be able to reflect upon this history and culture, then I can't think of anything that's more important. And so it means, like, personally a lot to me, which is why the flip side of Sadie Smith's Swing Time, you know, I just felt like there's a story that she really wanted to tell with Tracy, and then we don't see Tracy again. And right. It just pained me, because actually it is true. Like, what happens, you know, I talk about this all the time with my friends who I went to state schools in South London with, and I'm like, what happened to all the working class people? Why am I the only black person? And, you know, why? And so these books, you know, they're playing out at our dinner parties in like a totally different way, and the same.
And this is one of the subjects of her novels, of Zadie Smith's novels.
Exactly,
indeed,
but
right?
but you know, actually, like, what I find really frustrating for all of the brilliance that Ted and Anne have just described, then what I find really frustrating as someone that comes from that background is that it just doesn't quite push it enough, and that then it has to go into something else and be, you know, and actually the reality is that, you know, as a black middle class girl, then Keisha and NW, yeah. I was like, I'm not fake. I don't have, like, I don't have a pretend accent, and I don't have a fake name and identity that I've chosen to sort of fit in with this world. Actually, we could be both. And so it just pains me. So in this, I kind of wanted her to redeem herself to us as people of colour in the city. And it just didn't happen. And that's why I just can't, you know, that's why it's such a painful reminder of that we're not quite accepted. Whereas the Colson Whitehead brings our history right into the fore. And so that's why those are really comparative to me, coming from a
Well, I think they are for all of us. I think that's, I mean, not in the same way, but I think that's an effect. In fact, we could have done this whole show about those two books and what they mean, actually, for all of us, because we've all read both of them. Yeah. And we've all got a point of view on it, if not as specific and heartfelt as that one. But I think it's a fascinating thing. Although other books are available. So we've got a couple of minutes. I did say we would try to nail the idea of what's the point of book prizes. There is obviously a wonderful thing of being able to put a sticker on a dust jacket and say, this has won a prize and it's worthy of your time and your $8.99. That's a big deal. But can I go around the table? I'll start with you, Anne. As a commissioning editor and a publisher, what is the point of book prizes for you? I mean, is it to reward the best, or is it simply a nice sticker to have on the front?
I think this is an impossible question. I look forward to everyone else trying to answer it. But I mean, for publishers, they mean sales. Yeah. They really do mean sales.
No bad thing. I mean, this isn't...
No, and I think the reason that I will continue to take umbrage with the inclusion of Americans, no matter how brilliant they are, is that sales means an author's livelihood, and it yeah. means their ability to write more books and to, you know, often to feed themselves. So for us, it's sales. For me as a reader, yeah, I think it has to be about recognizing the best, but it's always going to be such a subjective and messy thing. I mean, these 5-6 judges are going to have their own particular tastes, their own particular ideas, their own particular agendas. And I think one of the interesting things about the Booker is how often it just gets it terribly, terribly wrong when you look back over its history and all the writers who haven't ever received the prize, and so it's always kind of it's always a crapshoot.
And but judge the book, not the writer. Judge the book in the year, not the writer.
Absolutely, and I think the greatest travesties of the book are the ones where it's sort of gone to a writer for a sort of a pale imitation of their former work, and I hope that doesn't happen this year.
M People won the Mercury Prize. I like them, M People, but I'm just saying. Ted. What?
It's true. Historic injustice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to look up that year.
I'm just 1992. Which album was it? It was 1992 for Elegant Summing, I believe.
Okay, all right.
It was a big year.
You preferred
year
their
them.
Early work.
They were massive, they were everywhere.
It was a big year for them.
Yeah. I feel like I've just sort of taken all the weight away from your fantastic answer, Anne. I'm really sorry.
I work in an arts centre, and obviously, you know, we host events like the Booker Prize in the Royal Festival Hall, and there is a theatricality to book prizes, and in some ways, you know, there's always going to be a conversation about who's left off the stage, who isn't on the list. But I think that the simple fact of having a moment where you have over 1,000 people in a room listening to, I think it's 6 authors on the shortlist who will come together and be from all different parts of the world, it's an exciting moment for literature that it can exist on that scale, I think. I mean, more deeply than that, I think it's also, it gets a conversation going, as the one we've been having.
It's good to have an argument. It's good to care. It's good to have the context. It's good to have all these weapons in your arsenal, right? To be able to know this stuff about these things. It's great.
And the distinctions that we're starting to draw out between the Whitehead and the Smith, you know, I think those are all conversations very worth having, and perhaps that's their real value. I agree with sales as well. Obviously, writers need to eat. But I think it's getting people talking about it, and people who wouldn't normally be interested in literature, I think, come into it. I mean, yes, there's a contrivance to the sort of winner and shortlist, but I think it might engage people, you know, who wouldn't otherwise think, you know, I think people are interested in that sense of, you know, who's going to prevail. And it also does get a conversation going about the omissions, the people who weren't included. And I love Katie Kitamura as a separation, and I would have loved to have seen that on the long list. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't, unfortunately.
Charmaine.
I just think that prizes, as Anne said, you know, the sales thing, now just having become a publisher, then is really, really, really important. And it's about the confidence of our retailers, really. You know, our retailers don't have, I think there's 1.5 million books that are published in English language every year. I mean, it's just like a phenomenal number of books that are published. And, you know, retailers, there's not very many of them, and they're really struggling to work out how to sort the wheat from the chaff, and prizes are a really, really good way of doing that. You know, I think having owned a bookshop and having worked in many bookshops, I think there's other ways of doing it, but this seems to be a way in which the orders that come in from a prize is phenomenal, and it will change a writer's career. And so I think that's why at the beginning of this I was like, understanding that then as a publisher, then, you know, it's really important. It's really important that there is a breadth of voices that are coming from smaller presses. I'd love to have seen some more smaller presses, and that there is a breadth of writing that's coming from new voices as well, because there's really great work and brilliant, brilliant stories that are coming from them. You know, as a scout, we read so much, and I could say I could have a whole show on what's missing, but, you know, that's for other people to do. But I think they're really, really, really important, but maybe retailers need to think a bit broader than the prizes that we have.
Hear, hear. Thank you all so much for your considered and fantastic answers. And we've kind of tackled an impossible question, and we've answered it as honestly as we can. And thank you so much for inventing a new quotient for judging novels, the atom dancing quotient. That's fantastic. Ted, people should head to the South Bank Centre to check out your talks and events that you're putting on for the summer
and
into the autumn as well. And your green
jumper
wasted on the radio. And Charmaine, congratulations on Dialogue Books.
It's thank
a fantastic you. New imprint. Thank you very much. And thanks also, of course, to my pal behind the glass, Holly Fisher. That's been Culture with me, Robert Bound. Thank you very much for tuning in.